Thank you for joining us tonight, and welcome to The Wine Muse. The Wine Muse is live every third Thursday of the month. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with my co-host, William Pollard, from Wild for Washington Wine.
The Greek tends to be a little bit more of a citric characteristic, having more lemon, lime.
Welcome, everybody, to The Wine Muse. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with my co-host, William Pollard, from Wild for Washington Wine. Hey, William.
Hey, Linda.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. It's going to be fun tonight to focus on Northwest wines.
Yeah, and that quote that we heard when we were coming in was actually Wayne Bailey from Youngberg Hill, and we're going to have a longer piece by him in just a little bit. But this the theme of the show today is spring and summer wines, especially now that we're into summer, really summer wines, and deciphering some of the labels that you see and choosing the right wine for you to make summer pop. Is your summer popping so far?
It's been so warm right now over here that summer wines have been on my mind and in my mouth.
Have they? Yes, mine too. And we had some great wines to sample with our guests. They are winemakers and wine growers, one from Youngberg Hills, one from Ghost Hill Cellars, and Bouchain Vineyards. So we got to taste a pretty good sampling of summer wines, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir Blanc, and Riesling. So I wanted to start right out asking you some questions about the Pinots, because you get these labels and you know, everybody probably sees Pinot Gris quite a bit, but you see these other ones, you know, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Grigio, Pinot Noir Blanc, Pinot Noir Rosé. What does all that mean? How do we decipher that? What's the difference?
Well, I think most people are comfortable with what Pinot Noir is. It's a thin skin red grape variety, which is typically used to make a red wine. Then we have Pinot Blanc, which is actually it's a mutation of the Pinot Noir. So when Pinot Noir mutates, you can get a bunch of dark fruit, and then you might get like one vine that's white. It's a white grape. So Pinot Blanc is actually a mutation of Pinot Noir.
Okay. And then Pinot Gris, go ahead, keep going.
So Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio are essentially the same thing. So the way I learned to tell the two is that Pinot Grigio is usually like an Italian style dry white, and Pinot Gris is more of a northern France style dry white. And that, you know, in my mind, I usually think Pinot Gris, I'm going to think more acidic, and Pinot Grigio, I'm going to think less acidic, in my mind at least.
Oh, really? So Pinot Gris, more acidic, Pinot Grigio, less acidic in your mind.
Right. And that's if you're thinking, you know, an Italian Pinot Grigio and a French Pinot Gris. Of course, in the United States, we can do whatever we want, and it's going to depend who's growing it, where they're growing it, what altitude they grow it at, and then how they treat it, you know, in the winery, in the cellar. So when you buy a U.S. Pinot Gris, it might actually be labeled a U.S. Pinot Grigio, depending on who's selling it.
Okay, and these are great summer wines.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually drinking a Pinot Gris right now.
All right, so let's go to Pinot Noir Blanc and Pinot Noir Rosé. What's going on with those?
Okay, so if we're talking Pinot Noir Blanc, we're actually talking Pinot Noir, the red grape, the thin skin red grape that we all know. But when it's called Pinot Noir Blanc, it means they treated it like a white wine. So that means that the grapes were crushed, but the juice was not left to sit on the skins. So there's minimal skin contact when you do Pinot Noir Blanc. So it's Pinot Noir made like a white wine. And so you do tend to pick up a little color with it. Also, my wine friends love Pinot Noir Blanc because very few people do it. It's, you know, if someone's going to make Pinot Noir, it's going to be a red wine and probably will have command a premium price. If somebody instead makes a Pinot Noir Blanc, it's going to be technically a white wine. It's not really a rosé. and it's not going to get the same kind of price as if it had been treated like a red wine. Now, a Pinot Noir Rosé, which should be even more rare if anyone's making it, would be when you're taking the Pinot Noir grape, you're crushing it, and you're leaving the juice in contact with the skins for hours instead of, say, weeks or months.
Now, we do have a Pinot Noir. We do have a Pinot Noir Blanc tonight from Ghost Hill Cellars, and there is a little hue to it. We'll talk about that more as we get to it. And I also want to talk and address this whole idea of rosé, because you and I have talked about it a lot. Among wine drinkers, rosés, everybody understands that there are some really complicated, wonderful rosés out there. But among a lot of other people, that has not filtered down. And so they still associate it with the mass-produced boxed wines. And when you buy a rosé, when I've been buying rosés lately, I've been getting comments from the people checking me out saying, oh, yeah, that was my first wine I ever drank, you know, a rosé. Or, you know, my wife likes that. She just got into wine. Or, you know, you get some negative comments. So I do want to address that before we go into our first interview. And but we'll talk about it some more as we go along, too.
Or do you want to talk about rosé right now?
Well, let's go ahead and just talk a second about rosé. And we'll talk about it again when we go into our interview with Mike Bayless of Ghost Hill Cellars.
So the rosés I drink are the dry rosés. They can range in color from, you know, like a pale pink to an orange, or they could be, you know, almost a dark pink verging on red, and then many shades in between. So if you think about a real pretty sunset where you get those colors of pink and reds and oranges, that's kind of the color of modern rosés. And modern rosés, from most of the producers that I see in the store and that I drink, they are in the dry style, not the sweet style. And that dry style rosé is a very flexible wine that pairs with almost anything. Anything off the grill, you talk seafood, you talk red meats, you talk chicken, you talk salads. Rosés are super flexible and really versatile. And so when I go to a restaurant and I'm looking at the menu, let's say at a Greek restaurant, for example, and if I see a rosé on there, that's from Greece, that's probably what I will order, and it will pair with almost anything that I want off the menu. So modern rosés really, you know, they have a lot more character, a lot more complexity, a lot more flavor, and then they have that, you know, nice dry quality to them. And I avoid the sweet rosés. I don't drink those.
Right. And so I think that what's happened is that people in America, a lot of times, I don't think this happens in the rest of, in fact, I know it doesn't happen in the rest of the world, but we get onto things that are trendy. And so I think that rosés were trendy at one time, and there was just a lot of people weren't experienced and didn't know the difference or know that there was a difference. And so they just started going to restaurants and ordering rosé, and it might be a boxed wine, and they weren't done in the dry style, and they weren't done, you know, with a lot of artisanship, like we are always seeking when we're looking for a fun wine experience.
Well, and I think the modern rosé, like for example, in Washington State, really became popular about 10 years ago. And I can tell you that, you know, 10 years ago, nine years ago, sometimes it was a tough sell to convince somebody that, taste it. This is not a white Zinfandel. This is not a sweet wine. This is not a syrupy wine. It's a serious wine. It drinks a little bigger than a white. It doesn't drink as big as a red, and it's going to be crisp and dry, and occasionally some might have a little tannin. And then you could see people kind of start to get it. But it's been, you know, it's been the last 8 or 9 years, you know, I think we've been working and teaching people, but, you know, I'm surprised to hear that people still haven't got it.
No, it still hasn't filtered down to everyone, and it's unfortunate because the rosés make a wonderful, wonderful summer wine, and they go right up there. The Pinot Gris, that's probably the king of the summer wines. Your Chardonnays, your Fumée, Sauvignon Blancs, same thing there. But these are all wonderful summer wines, and Riesling too. And so we have a Riesling tonight, and so it's just like you need to be able to drop all your stereotypes, drop all the things you've heard, and get back to just, is it done well? Experience the wine that you have, and try to get try to get out of the fad thinking. But right now we are going to do the Pinot Gris, because we're talking to Wayne Bailey from Youngberg Hill. He's the first interview we have tonight. It's very exciting to talk to him. He was just he's down there in McMinnville, Oregon. So he's a great spokesman for their area. Have you ever been to McMinnville?
Yeah, I was there in 2011. Beautiful location. That's just beautiful country down there.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and play our interview, and we'll be right back. And we're going to talk about his wines that he sent us. But right now, we're going to hear, in his words, Wayne Bailey from Youngberg Hill.
All right.
Well, hello. Welcome back to the Wine Muse. Today, we're extremely happy to have Wayne Bailey, the grower and winemaker for Youngberg Hill in McMinnville, Oregon. And Wayne is going to talk to us about a couple of wines, both white, and also some vineyard practices. Welcome to the show, Wayne. How are you today?
Welcome. Thank you. I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here in McMinnville, Oregon.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. You know, that is beautiful country. Absolutely gorgeous. What a wonderful place to live.
It is indeed. We've got the mountains, the ocean, and sunshine, and the perception that it rains here all the time is far from the truth. In fact, we don't get any rain from June through October typically. So,
wow,
we're basking in the sun right now.
Ooh, nice.
Well, we've been pretty happy to have a couple of your wines to taste. We have both whites. We have the 2014 Aspen Pinot Gris, and we also have the 2014 Pinot Blanc. Could you tell us about those wines?
Yes. First of all, the 2014 vintage was a great vintage for the Willamette Valley. We had an early spring, we had a warm season, and we actually harvested a couple of weeks earlier than normal. And as a result, the wines tend to be very fruitful, very robust in flavor profile, and just rich with a lot of complexity. The Pinot Gris is a state-grown fruit that was planted back in 2006. And the Pinot Gris is an all-stainless steel fermentation. It does not go into oak barrels at all. It is not does not go through a malolactic fermentation. Hmm. So as a result, this is a very fresh, crisp, clean wine. It's got a little bit of residual sugar. And so I always like to pair it with more spicy foods like Thai and Indian curry.
Mm-hmm.
The Pinot Blanc is a very, very different wine. It is actually fruit that I purchased from a neighbor of mine still here in the McMinnville AVA. And it is fermented in stainless as well. However, we ferment that down to 0% residual sugar, so it's a very dry wine. We call it a bone dry wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put it in neutral oak barrels for 2 months. And that's not to impart any oak characteristics on the wine. It is only to allow the wine to age in the barrel, which gives it a little bit fuller mouthfeel and a nice round finish.
So what do you like to pair with the Pinot Blanc?
Oh, the Pinot Blanc is always crab cakes with a mango sauce.
Oh, wow. Mm. That sounds good.
Yeah, it does.
Now, the vineyard that you manage and the wine that you make, I was reading a little bit on your site, you're organic, you're salmon safe, and you're moving to sustainable and biodynamic. Is that correct?
We've actually been practicing biodynamics now for 3 years. We're in our fourth year now. Yes. Okay. And we do not irrigate. Which surprises a lot of people. Even though we don't get any rain during the summer, our aquifer is 100% saturated going into the growing season, and we're able to sustain the vineyard without having to irrigate. And that's nice because you get a little bit more variability because we're in a cool climate and because we don't irrigate. Year to year, you get that larger amount of variability, somewhat like you do in Burgundy.
Wow. Hmm.
Okay. You know, we need to have you back to talk about some of these sustainable biodynamic practices. That's a different topic that Lynn and I have been wanting to address.
It is, and I could go on forever and ever
that one. Well, since we're talking, though, about these two wines today, Pinot Gris being gray, and Pinot Blanc being white. What are what are the differences in these two grapes? They both have Pinot, but one's white and one's grayish. But what are the characteristics of those varietals?
The Gris tends to be a little bit more of a citric characteristics, having more lemon, lime, grapefruit on some occasions, you know, and kind of on that vibe. The Pinot Blanc tends to be more pear, watermelon, sometimes from variants from year to year, possibly a little bit of grapefruit, but tends to have more tree fruit characteristics.
Good to know. Good to know. And we want to talk a little bit about the winery, too, just the beautiful setting you have and the inn and the elopement package. For all those people who want to save their parents the cost of having to do a big wedding or put that money in their pocket, you have an elopement package.
Sounds like you've got maybe a certain interest in that.
Well, my daughter's getting married this summer, and I'm thinking of talking her into it.
Well, it actually goes back to something that my wife and I did. We eloped, over 15 years ago, and so we just really enjoyed that, and we did it in wine country, and we did it at a winery, and so we thought, well, what a neat thing to be allow, you know, others to do that, and we've got such a, as you mentioned, gorgeous site, great views all the way around, that it just makes it very conducive. So you go up to the top of our highest block of vines, which are 25 years old, and we've got a rope swing up there and a park bench, and you know, it's just a fabulous setting, and you've got the vineyard as your backdrop and things. So it's just nice for a nice quiet affair to slip through. And you know, you can have a 4, 5, or 10, or 12 guests come and join you and celebrate with a bottle of champagne and no fuss, no muss.
And a justice of the peace also. That's, I mean, you got it all.
Yes, that's
you just
correct.
Have to show up.
Yep.
How much we better does it get?
It.
No, my husband and I eloped too. So, and also William and his wife eloped. So we're all three elopees.
So we know how to do it.
That's we do, right. And you know what you're doing there. I caught on to that immediately when I went to your site. I was like, oh, my goodness, this is genius. So anybody out there who's getting married this summer, go to youngberghill.com and check out the elopement package. But you also do the traditional weddings, too, for up to 300 guests, I noticed, for those people.
Yes, yeah, we do, yep.
Wayne, for our listeners that aren't familiar with where McMinnville, Oregon is, how far is that from Portland?
It's 35 miles due south of Portland, south and a little bit to the west. So it's right down I-5 and 99, very easy to get from. And there are 316 wineries in the Willamette Valley, all specializing, of course, in Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, and Chardonnay. And there are just within our vicinity, within a 20-minute drive, there's about 150 of those wineries.
Aha. So plenty of wines to sample.
Sounds fun. So sounds
there
fun.
Is. It'll take you a couple of days, yeah.
A couple of days.
Well, William and I are putting together a show on wines at weddings today, actually, later today. And so I'm going to make sure we give a shout-out to your winery because this is wine season. You have great wines that could be on in the summer wine category for weddings or for your boat or your house or your wherever you're at. And you also, if you are planning a marriage, can go there to the winery and get that done too. You do it all.
And if you just want to come out and enjoy wine country.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for introducing the wine today and coming on talking to us. And we would like to have you back on to do the biodynamics and possibly other
topics.
Oh,
I'd love to do that.
Okay. We're going to take you up on that.
Okay.
Okay, cheers.
Have a great day out there in
Oregon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Cheers. Bye.
Summertime, and the living is easy.
So, William, it's fun to hear those interviews again because I realized I had a one-track mind in that interview. It was all about weddings. He's like, and we do wine tastings. Our number one thing is wine tastings, not elopements. How did you get on to that?
No, that was a good interview because a lot of people, when they think Oregon wines, they think Pinot Noir, the red wine. And Oregon makes wonderful, phenomenal white wines.
Yes, and all those wineries in McMinnville. I didn't know there were so many. You could spend, I think, way more than 2 days. You'd need to spend possibly maybe a month.
It might take a while to visit every winery.
Yeah, I really had fun talking to Wayne. We're all elopees. I mean, geez. Mm-hmm. How often do you get three people who are all elopees
that's
in the
right
same room?
Not often.
That's right. We were just smart. We saved our parents a lot of money. So the wines, go ahead.
Yeah, his 2014 Pinot Blanc, as he mentioned, is no residual sugar. It's bone dry. And it is it's the style of wine I usually think of for summer. Just, you know, crisp, dry, light flavored, savory finish, and wonderful with food. For me, this was a food wine for me, seafood wine.
Yeah, I agree. It was wonderful. Same thing, no sugar. It was dry, lots mm-hmm. of citrus and pear. It was really well balanced. I think they like to say creamy. I think that is a good way to describe a summer white wine. It did touch oak, but it was neutral oak, he said. And right. I didn't taste any of that in there. So how about you?
I got a little, maybe a little hazelnut on the nose.
Okay.
So that's probably the closest you could come to maybe saying, or maybe, and there was maybe a little nuttiness on the palate. So, you know, that might,
I read that these are, nuttiness. Yeah, there you go. That would be the oak. I read that the vines were 40 plus years old. Did you read that too?
I missed that part.
Okay. And 150 cases and 13.5% alcohol. Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot of it. It's a delicious wine though. I would highly recommend that one. Now the Pinot Gris, it was a little right. different than what we're used to. He said, he told us it has residual sugar.
So, yeah, right. And so when I open a bottle of wine, I try to avoid the tasting notes because I don't want to be influenced by something someone else wrote. So once again, when I see the word Pinot Gris, in my mind, I'm thinking a dry, crisp white wine. And I think we both had the experiences that we were shocked that it had sugar. It was sweet.
Yeah, yeah. And he said that it did.
Right, and according to their notes, it said 3.62% residual sugar, which you can taste that sweetness in this wine. And it threw me at first because I was expecting a dry, crisp white, not a sweet one or a sweetish one. But once I got over my shock, my initial shock, and I realized what the wine was, I treated this wine as more of a dessert wine, an after dinner wine, a sunset wine, a late evening wine. And once I had done that, I loved this wine, absolutely adored it. It was just, and for me, the I got a lot of apricot off of it and kind of a sharp vanilla creaminess.
Yes, me too.
And for me, this was just wonderful at night. Just, you know, just sipping, watching that little bit of color as the sunset fades away. And so for me, that was how I drank the wine after dinner.
Spicy. You're just going to say spicy because he mentioned Thai or Indian curry. And I think right. that with that type of meal, that wine would have been perfect. I didn't have Thai or Indian curry with it. I still have some left though. So I'm going to get some Thai. And that would be the perfect wine if you're doing a spicy meal.
And my advice would, if you get some food that just is packed with killer heat and it won't go away, this is the kind of wine, this is the style of wine that you want to pair with that kind of food where it just has so much heat. You go, what? I can't drink water with this. What do I drink with this? And the Youngberry Hill, their 2014 Aspen Pinot Gris would be the kind of wine you would want. And I haven't had any, I've been kind of off of spicy foods lately, just so.
Right. And that's why you have to taste these wines before you pair them. Or in this case, we can both certify, and so did Wayne, that this one would go very well with a spicy meal. So you're safe to just go buy it and serve it with a spicy meal and you'll thank us later. But generally, if you don't have someone telling you that, you do need to taste it and decide what's good. Because it says something on the label, you can't, again, stereotype a wine. That's the great thing about these artisan wines is that it's dependent upon the year that the grapes were grown and the process they were put through and just so many factors. And that's what's fun about opening. It's what makes it such a great experience.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It was a treat. Once I knew what it was and understood the wine, then I was able to appreciate it.
Now we're going to switch gears to the Bouchaine wine, the Riesling. And this brings up another thing like the rosé, because Riesling is another one that you buy and people say the same kind of thing. Oh, yeah, that's I started drinking that when I first drank wine, but wow, I'm way beyond Riesling now. And yet, I mean, people who have been drinking wine and enjoying wine know that Rieslings come in all different sizes and shapes and tastes. And, you know, and this is one of those wines. But like rosé, it's gotten a bad stereotype. And we did a show on that, didn't we?
I think we did.
Right, well, we talked about doing a show on that. I'm pretty sure we've done so many shows, I can't remember what we've talked about and we haven't. But we've talked about it ourselves a whole lot. And I think we've brought it up on past shows, too. But Riesling is one of those wines that people sometimes dismiss. But then the people who are really serious about wine, I don't want to call them wine connoisseurs, but wine lovers that are just, they have rediscovered it. And it turns out Riesling is pretty rare in the Carneros Valley.
So I've gone through that process where I began with Riesling and then I refused to drink it. I have come back over the last 4 or 5 years, I've come back to Riesling. And I felt that, you know, this Riesling that we had from Bouchaine, it may be the first Riesling from California I've had in 2 decades. I really enjoyed it.
We talked to Chris Kajani about this wine, even though she's not the one who made it, Michael Richmond made it. And he has been a guest on our show before from Bouchaine Vineyards, but he retired this year. So that's sad. I hope he still is out there to educate us, because talk about somebody who's really passionate about wine. But Chris is too. And I really enjoyed getting to meet her. She has big shoes to fill, but I'm sure she's not going to have any problem doing that at Bouchaine.
Right. It seemed like a nice group.
But it was really fun getting to know her. So let's go ahead and play her interview. And then we're going to talk about the wine that we're doing for summer. They've got a lot of other wines. We did a Chardonnay show with their wines. We did a Pinot Noir show with their wines. And all these, and Youngberg Hill does too. There's a lot of other wines. But we're specifically talking right now about summer wines. And so this is their Riesling, which their wine club is crazy, crazy, crazy about. So let's go ahead and play Chris Kajani's interview. We'll be right back.
Well, we're very pleased today to welcome a guest to the show, Chris Kajani of Bouchaine Vineyards. Chris is the Bouchaine Vineyards new winemaker and general manager. She's replacing Bouchaine's Michael Richmond winemaker, whom we have interviewed in the past. So, Chris, welcome to the show and congratulations on working at Bouchaine Vineyards.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be working with Bouchaine.
Well, we see that you have a wonderful career working at other wineries, and now you're taking over with Bouchaine. And I guess things are changing at the winery. I see that there are some new construction plans going on. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a major modification in with our use permit for the county, and we're really excited to talk to them about our plans for building a hospitality center and revamping our winery, which is in a 115-year-old building, believe it or not. And while, the wines are spectacular and we're putting out this amazing product, a little bit of updating, I think, is really going to take us far.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, today we're going to talk about the Bouchaine 2014 Riesling, the Las Brisas Vineyard. And I've already opened and tasted the wine, and I was impressed.
Oh, thank you. That's Michael's wine, so I can't take any credit for it, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Yes, please. I was wondering in particular what the residual sugar is on this wine. Do you know?
I mean, it's floating in the high 20 gram per liter area. It's really a floating target during harvest. And so I believe they were running residual sugars once or twice a day to try and kind of dial it in. But I think Mike did most of it by taste. So he would taste the tank once or twice a day. And when he felt that it was at a spot where, all the nice sort of aromatics and stone fruit were really popping, whatever sugar was there that worked on the palate and rounded that out a little bit, that's where he sort of called it done.
So what are your ideas for pairing this wine with food? Because that's the first thing I thought of when I opened the wine and tasted it, is what I was going to pair with it.
Oh, that's a good question. The first thing that pops in my head is like some type of like pork with like roast peaches, like peaches on the grill. Mm-hmm. Because all that stone fruit really pops in the Riesling, and a little bit of like grilled peach or apricot with pork roast that maybe has rosemary, touching on the little herbal notes and the little stone fruit notes and that nice bit of fresh sweetness. That would be really nice. You could also grill shrimp, maybe like some really nice grilled marinated like mango or some type of tropical fruit marinated shrimp. That would be
lunch. That sounds great.
Right? I know. I'm so hungry now.
It sounds delicious. Now, Riesling is not a Carnero staple. You guys are really well known for your Pinot Noir, but Riesling is rare. What's going on with that? And why? How did you get this?
Well, we have had a relationship with Francis Mahoney, I think, since the winery was really founded in the early 80s. And I know that Mike Richmond had a relationship with Francis Mahoney, who grows this Riesling his entire career, basically. When he founded Acacia, Francis was planting vineyards out in Carnero. So they're old friends. And quite frankly, we're a Pinot Noir Chardonnay house. We have a little bit of Pinot Gris on the estate vineyard also, but that's the majority of what we do is Pinot and Chardonnay. And it's fun for winemakers to experiment Chinese things. And Francis Mahoney had an acre of Riesling and an acre of Pinot Blanc. And I think him and Mike got talking over bocce or fishing or something one day. And Mike said, we'll take it. We'll take the acre of each. And we've been playing with it ever since. Hmm.
Are you going to continue this now that Michael is retiring?
Oh, my gosh. If I stop making this, our wine club would lose their minds. we will definitely continue. It's very, very popular with the wine club. And it's fun when you have chef dinners. We do a chef dinner the last Saturday of every month. And it's fun to have a couple different tools in your toolbox. It's great to do Pinots, and it's great to do our Chardonnays. But depending on what the chef's specialty is and what they want to serve, it's nice to be able to pull in a Riesling. It's nice to be able to pull in, small productions of different varietals.
Well, and I think also with this wine, it's 10.2% alcohol, so it's a lower alcohol white wine. And for some people, that is, sought after.
So don't feel bad if you end up drinking the bottle by yourself. I'm just saying, I think it's been known to happen.
I think it probably has by three people right here. We're talking right now. Well, Chris, do you have any last thoughts on this wine before we open it and talk about it a little bit more?
I just want to throw out that Carnero's, I worked out there for over 9 years now, and I come driving in from work from Up Valley, and you start hitting that cool, breezy fog in Carnero's, and those misty, like heavy marine layers in the morning. And not only is it fabulous for thin skin varieties like Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but Riesling just shines there because it maintains its naturally like high, really tangy acidity. But then you get all this lovely, these lovely aromatics and all this lovely stone fruit and white flower aromas. And those nice, cool, cool mornings where the fog doesn't even burn off till noon really just makes Riesling sing. If anybody asks me, what they should try and plant in Carnero, I would not say no to Riesling.
Mm. Nice.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. Yeah. I look forward to enjoying it myself. Well, you are a busy gal down there. You're getting ready for some big event. What was it that's going on down there right now?
Yeah, this is Auction Napa Valley Weekend. So we have consumers from every continent come out to Napa Valley to enjoy our hospitality and to taste individual lots of wine that they can't taste anywhere else. There's tons of like packages to bid on at the auction. So we just set up our flash auction booth. We're auctioning off 4 nights at the Copeland residence at the Carnero Shen. And there's dinners and wine tastings and spa packages and all kinds of stuff involved. So I've been out putting our booth together and getting everything ready tomorrow for people to come preview.
Wow. So put construction on there on your resume from now on.
Right? I'm a designer Carpenter. Now, too.
And is the weather nice down there? It must be beautiful.
It's really nice. It's mid-80s right now. It's a little bit breezy, but the sun is out and big, white, puffy cotton ball clouds in the sky. It's really gorgeous.
Lovely. Oh, wonderful. Oh, I'm jealous. All right, so they can go to Bushane.com to learn more about it. We're going to enjoy this Riesling now. Thank you so much for coming on, Chris.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having
Thank you,
Chris. Real pleasure to speak with you.
Good
you
luck
too.
At that auction. Sounds
good. Yeah, all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. Come see us.
We okay. will. Have a nice day. Cheers.
Good. You too. Bye-bye.
Summertime and the living.
So our music is subliminal advertising for summertime. If you aren't in the mood for summer, which isn't official yet, it's going to be official in just a few days. You should be now. We're still at the edge of spring, not quite into summer yet.
Almost there. No, I really enjoyed like Chris's comment about Michael Richmond and his art of winemaking. He tasted it till it tasted right. And then he said, that's it. It's ready.
Yeah, I really like Chris. She's a real personality, just real full of energy, real positive. I really, really enjoyed talking to her. I hope we get to talk to her again. And like she said, this isn't the Riesling that she made. This is one of Michael's pet projects. And there's only 1 acre of Riesling. His friend down there was planting, and they decided to mold that into a new and exciting wine to just have more offerings, which they have a lot of offerings already at their winery, Bushane. So you loved this wine. Go ahead.
Well, she was so spot on about the acidity. A Riesling needs acid, and the Rieslings I enjoy have, some pronounced acid to offset.
Yes.
This wine has a fair amount of sugar in it, but you can't really tell it because of the acidity balances out so well. And this is a food wine. And she suggested the pork, and I had, I made grilled pork steaks, and it went wonderful with this wine. It was wonderful pairing.
Did you put rosemary in it, like she said?
I did not. I've simplified my seasoning with pork lately. Salt and pepper. That's all I do.
Okay. And then grilled peaches. I liked her idea about grilled peaches or apricots. Yeah,
sounds really good right now.
And she also said shrimp. I know. She's making us very hungry as we talked. But yeah, she sounds like a really exciting new addition to Bushane. So about the wine, it says that a small amount of Botrytis cinerea, what noble rot was used to help intensify. What does that mean?
So when you leave the fruit on the vine for a while, you can get mold on the grapes. And if the winemaker is there and has educated the grower, they can stop them from throwing that stuff away and say, no, we want that. Because that adds the sweetness. That adds a level of sweetness. And I've had a number of these noble, and it doesn't happen always, but when you have noble rot on Riesling grapes, for example, you can make a gorgeous dessert wine, just absolutely to die for sweet wine. What they did with this wine is they kept the acidity and paired it with that sweetness to make just a beautiful expression of Riesling and one that I thoroughly enjoyed. And this wine also, because of that acidity, it's going to hold up in the bottle for a long time or in the fridge for, you could probably get a week off of this wine if you open it. And if you only do a glass a night, this would be a perfect wine for them.
Well, it's interesting. Riesling is one of those wines we talked about that it does have a little bit of a stigma, but yet some of these Rieslings that are being done today, like this one, are some of the best wines you can choose for summer and really surprise your guests who might have a stereotype in their mind about, the Rieslings they've had in the past.
And this style of Riesling is wonderful with soft cheeses and crackers. So if you are thinking about hosting a tasting at home, an event, and you want to have a wine that can go with your cheese and crackers, appetizers before dinner, this would be a lovely wine because it goes really well with soft cheese.
Oh, that's a really good, so as an aperitif.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that would get them ready, get their palate ready for whatever you're doing for dinner. And yeah, you do have to think differently than you do during the year, during the winter. Summer is such a different time. Summertime is so different. it's hot and the foods you're eating are different and your taste buds are experiencing everything different. And so you really do need to change the wine up and you need to do something new for appetizer wine. Like you just mentioned, this would be a great one. And then your dinner wine should be something different. And then your dessert should be different. Mm-hmm. And then what you would normally do. That's what we're trying to do today is think outside the box with summer wines. Now we're going to move on to one that is another beautiful, beautiful wine, the Pinot Noir Blanc from Ghost Hill Cellars. And that gets us into, again, we were talking about all those different Pinots. This is Pinot Noir Blanc. So let's go ahead and talk about that again, what we're getting in this bottle.
Right. So
when you see something like that on the label, which is rare.
Right. So, you know, it is Pinot Noir, but it's done in a white wine style. So it doesn't have, you know, when it's crushed, when the fruit is crushed and juiced, that's the contact it has with the skin at that juicing point. So it's minimal skin contact. So you get minimal color transfer. And it adds to the specialness of the wine. And among my wine aficionados that I know who live, drink, breathe, live for wine, this is something extra special that you do not see very often. I've only seen one other winery in Oregon that does a Pinot Noir Blanc, and it's such a limited production, they sell out quickly. So this is a special wine. It's not an everyday wine. So.
Yeah. Well, it's a delicious wine, and we're going to talk about it some more when we get back. But we're first of all going to listen to our interview. And we had an interview with Mike Bayless from Ghost Hill Cellars. There is a name. There's a reason why their cellar is named Ghost Hill, and it's not just because it sounds good. There's actually a story behind it, and he's going to share that with us. He's actually a grower. I mean, he transferred, his family's been growing fruit and doing other agriculture for almost 100 years, I think he said. And he'll talk more about that in the interview. And they switched over to wine. And so they grow their own Pinot Noir grapes, of course. And then they develop these wonderful, wonderful wines from them. So we're going to go ahead and talk to him. Then we're going to come back and talk some more specifically about this wine and others like it. Great summer wines.
Hello, and we are happy today to have Mike Bayless of Ghost Hill Cellars of Carlton, Oregon on the show today. Ghost Hill Cellars is a live certified winery, and they also practice sustainable viticulture. And today we're speaking with Mike about the Ghost Hill Cellars Pinot Noir Blanc. Welcome to our show, Mike. How are you today?
I'm fine, William. Glad to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on. This wine is interesting to me because, at first, I've never had one, believe it or not. A Pinot Noir Blanc, what is that? I mean, I understand it's Pinot Noir, but it's white.
It is white, yes. It's made from the Pinot Noir grape, which is normally a red wine. The skin is purple, but the juice inside is clear. So when we bring the fruit in out of the field, and we don't process it in any way. We put it directly into the press, whole cluster, and press the wine or press it until we start to get color in the juice, and then we switch it to a different tank, and that's primarily. And then we. After we let it set for a week or so, we rake it, and then that leaves behind the tannins and the color, all of the color pigment, and we get end up with the lighter, more bright juice, and then we age it in a stainless steel tank for around 5 months. And when it's done working, we on the leaves, and then when it's done working, we filter it and bottle it.
So, you know, so to my eye, it looks almost like a rosé, but technically this is not a rosé wine.
No, it isn't a rosé. In fact, it's a light gold hue. I don't really see much rose in it, but they call it a slight, I would say it's a slight rose-colored gold hue.
Mm-hmm.
And a rosé, you let that sit on the skins for around a day, a little more, a little less, and then press it, whereas this is pressed directly out of the field, out of the vineyard, I mean.
So this is actually a really special wine because I very, very seldom see Pinot Noir Blanc on the market.
It isn't made. There's a few people that make it around here in the Oregon Willamette Valley, but not too many. It has good acidity because of... we pick it about a week, or I left that out. We pick it a week to 2 weeks before the rest of the Pinot Noir grapes
mm-hmm.
to serve the acidity because we're leaving behind the tannins. There's no tannins in it.
Okay. Wow. So this is a perfect summer sipper, nice and chilled on a hot day. This would be a wonderful wine to have on hand.
Right. It's very, it's good alone by itself, and it's good with seafood especially. Creamy dishes and hot food, Thai food, that sort of thing.
Okay. That sounds wonderful. Now, a lot of times I'm passing through going to the coast, speaking of seafood, you know, because we like to stay at Lincoln City and Newport and those areas. And this AVA, the Yamhill Carlton AVA, is a little bit beyond the McMinnville. What are the differences in these two AVAs?
Well, we're a little north of McMinnville, and we have the rolling hills of, we're on what we call Savannah Ridge, which is, they're rolling hills, it's Willikensy soil, which is an ancient ocean bottom with some sedimentary soils on top. And broken down volcanic rock above the ocean bottom.
Hmm.
So that's the primary difference. It's a different soil.
Okay.
That's beautiful country over there.
Well, thank you. We think so too. Yeah.
Well, and your family has been farming for a long time, and you grow all of your own grapes.
Oh, correct. They're all estate grown. My family's owned the farm since 1906.
So. Oh,
wow. And what got you into growing grapes?
Well, we happen to be in the center of prime grape ground. I mean, my grandfather bought it to make it to have a dairy. And it's just by luck that we happen to be in the middle of wine country now. We wanted something. I want to preserve the land for the future generations, and if we left it as just a farm, it wouldn't be financially viable. So that's one of the reasons that we got into it. My son-in-law is very much into wine. He's a partner. My wife, my son, my daughter, my son-in-law, we're all partners in the vineyard and winery.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, Ghost Hill, is that the name of the hill? Where does the name come from?
Well, it's part of our property is Ghost Hill. Ghost, during the late 1800s, the road that goes through our property is part of the original military road from Portland to Salem. And during the late 1800s, a miner was passing through. He camped up there for the night. That's where he happened to stay, and on top of the hill. And during the night sometime, someone snuck into his camp and murdered him for his hulk of gold. In the process, his horse was killed. And since then, he's been seen astride his horse looking for those who took his life and his gold.
Ooh, scary. You got a ghost story to go along with the name.
Actually, yes. It was known as Ghost Hill by the pioneers, the original settlers in the area. And we had a elderly neighbor that has since passed away that as a little girl got her older brother to take her up on the hill because she heard the stories. And she saw the bones of a horse and a rotting saddle up there.
Wow.
Oh, wow. So it's not based on fiction. It's based on fact.
Yes. This is a yes. But we haven't found anything in print. We've heard that it's in print, but we haven't been able to find it.
Hmm.
The story of the miner, at least, mm-hmm. I mean, his death. There weren't very many people in this valley at that time, so.
No, even now it's grown so much just since I've been going over there. It's just a huge expansion, and the wine area is just grown by leaps and bounds, like it has over here in Washington.
Yeah, well, right here where I can see three different vineyards when I look out my window. So.
Mm. Wow. Now, you don't have wine tastings, I read, at your facility. Is that correct?
No. Oh, no. We do. We have a small tasting room.
Oh, okay. You do have a tasting room. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's a small tasting room, and I built it mostly out of a lot of the things I built used or reclaimed things, like our barn, which is over 100 years old. I used some of the lumber from that, and I used to work at a Trappist monastery. We have the stained glass. They remodeled or built a new church, so I've got the, and it's not stained glass, it's just a rose-colored glass that I used to make the windows, and it's very rustic.
Oh, I love it. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah. I see that your hours are 11 to 5, Saturdays and Sundays.
That's correct. We're all open during the summertime, or, well, from May till Thanksgiving.
Okay. May till Thanksgiving.
We're a very small artisan winery, so we only make about 1,200 cases a year of wine total.
Wow. Well, I saw that you can order it online.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
At ghosthillcellars.com.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today and introducing the wine. This is going to be a special event for me since I have never had a Pinot Noir Blanc before, so I appreciate it very much, the opportunity.
A real treat.
Well, you're welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Enjoy.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks for having me on, Linda and William.
Thank you for coming
summertime,
on.
And the living is easy.
Okay, I swear that's the last time you're going to have to listen to Summertime. I am not going to play it again, but it was a very interesting article. He's been a farmer for a long time, and he has that mm-hmm. persona. He's humble, soft-spoken, straightforward. And his wine was absolutely delightful. Such an experience. Just such a treat. I was so happy to have had it and experienced it. Delicious.
For me, this was just a lovely, special wine. And talk about a lazy day wine. That's... When I was sipping this wine, it just, I don't know, it relaxed me. It was just, I liked everything about this wine, the color, the aromas, the flavors. And I don't have a hot tub, but if I had a hot tub, this is the wine I'd be drinking. Because this
is
just,
wine.
It was just put me in a calm, relaxed, lazy, no hurries, no worries kind of mood. I enjoyed this wine a lot.
Yeah, well, there's like there's a little bit of caramel in it, ripe green figs they've used to describe it. I tasted that. Jasmine. It has so many flavors that emerged throughout the time we drank it. Baked pear, vanilla ice cream. He said that it would go good with seafood, pasta, spicier. Well, he didn't say pasta. I said pasta. But spicier foods like Thai food. And I agree with him. I think that it would go perfect with that. But it also is just a really good wine to drink alone. It's an experience, too. It's just one of those wines you might just want to set out and enjoy with maybe something real light and have it be the star of the show.
I just sat outside and read a book. That's what I did.
Now, when I looked at the wine, it did seem like it was throwing off some pink to me. He said it's more of a gold with a slight rose. Would this be categorized? Well, I guess it wouldn't be categorized as a rosé then. They didn't categorize it that way, so it's not.
Yeah, it's not a rosé. But the colors, so for me, the color appeared to be a pale copper orange is the color. That's what it looked like to me.
Okay, I think that's pretty accurate. Depending on where you're drinking it, it's pretty subtle. So you're going to have to, if you have a clear background, it's probably whatever it's, you know, what's shining into the glass too. But I found it to be a wine that it reminded me of a more substantial wine than a lot of times you think of a summer wine, and yet it had the refreshing crispness of a summer wine. Now I'm a very big fan of Pinot Noir Blanc and Pinot Noir Rosé, which, you know, this is almost there with that, but, you know, just the Pinot Noir grapes made into white wines.
Yeah, and you will not see many of these. There are very, very few people that make the Pinot Noir Blanc. So it was a true treat and a very special wine. And I would, you know, it's a special occasion wine. And if you have friends, hint, hint, if you have friends who like wine a lot, this would be something to throw on them that I would see a lot of big thank yous from them. It'd be a wonderful gift wine.
Oh, yeah. Please get me that gift, somebody. It's made from 100% Pinot Noir grapes, and it's made in the tradition of champagne, so without the bubbles. And I think that's pretty safe way to say what I experienced with it, too. It's like, you know, champagne or sparkling wine is like a celebration. This wine had that feeling, too, like it's the star of the party. It's, you know, here to bring the party to you. That's how I felt about it. It was, I don't know, it was like a celebratory wine in some ways. And there's always a reason to celebrate.
And it was really enjoyable on a hot day. I just thought it was lovely wine on a nice hot day. And for me, the way I like to relax, if I have a good book and a good wine, I'm happy. That's my speed right there.
Absolutely. These were all fantastic wines, and very thankful to the wineries who came on and introduced them and for letting us sample them. I want to throw out a couple more we didn't taste tonight. You know, Sauvignon Blanc is synonymous with Fumé Blanc, and that's also a great summer wine. We have just a couple more minutes. What other varietals that we haven't mentioned, William, that you might want to shout out for as we end the show?
I think those are both excellent shout outs right there. Another one would be Viognier in Washington State. You know, one of my favorite Viogniers is made by Alexander Nicole Sellers. Just, you know, really beautiful, feminine, refreshing, lighter-bodied wines that on a hot day just go down so well.
How about Grüner Veltliner? Like, we did a big show on Grüner Veltliner, and that's right, a fantastic summer wine.
And it's and Grüner is, you know, the kind of wine with a salad, like a mixed green salad, would go great with that wine. And with the summer heat, you want the lighter foods and lighter wines, and great pairing idea.
How about Gewürztraminer?
Gewürz is good, though Gewürz can be a little heavy sometimes. So, and they tend to be a little sweeter. So if you're doing the spicy foods, a Gewürz would be a good choice.
Okay. I tend to go towards, in summer, my Pinot Gris, for sure, and Sauvignon Blanc or Fumé Blanc. Now I've expanded and this year is the first year I've been drinking any rosés, because I had that stigma against them. And I've had a French rosé, and I've had the Pinot Noir rosé from Siren Song, and then I've had the Julia's Dazzle. I think I bought about 10 cases of Julia's Dazzle, actually. So I've gone full-fledged into the rosés. But those are my Pinot Noir rosé, for sure.
Well, and I would also encourage listeners to go look for Chardonnay unoaked Chardonnay, or it might say fermented in stainless, so no oak. And those are going to be lighter, crisper versions of Chardonnay.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. I totally forgot about Chardonnay. And Chablis, I guess. It's another name, I guess, for Chardonnay grapes. I'm not really sure how that works. I haven't been a huge Chardonnay fan. Until we did the show on Chardonnay, and then I started. Now that I realize this whole huge world of Chardonnays out there, and I know people in the southern climates tend to already drink a lot of those in California and Florida and Texas. I mean, I don't know about Texas, but places like that. Up here in Washington, it tends to be a little colder, so we kind of gravitate towards. But we are at the end of our show. So we will see you here next month, third Thursday. Hope you enjoyed our summer wines and got to know a little bit as we did. William?
A big thank you. Big thank you to all of the guests that we had on the show. It was just a lot of fun speaking with the winemakers and the growers and having them share their insights into their wines. Just a real treat.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we'll hear back here next third Thursday. And I'm not sure what the show is going to be about, but we will have it on our page. So keep watching and enjoy. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us tonight on The Wine Muse. You can hear more of our shows at minstrelandmuse.com, and you can find us at William Pollard's blog at wildforwashingtonwine.com. Please join us again every third Thursday of the month, live here on BTR for another new show.